got you interested and how did you stumble on the story?
Well, I was raised as a Quaker in New England. And I was reading an article by Lawrence Scanlon about the Canadian prison system in 2010, when in their infinite wisdom, our government thought it would be a good idea to get rid of the farms that were on the in our prisons, which I thought, that's crazy, the farms are a great part of... Anyway, and what he compared it to was something called the York Retreat, which was started by English Quakers in the 1700s as a place for people with mental disabilities. And it was a place where they would be in the country and able to live and heal. And so that got me interested in the Quakers and some of the interesting things that the Quakers have done. And I thought, maybe this is a place to go for my next novel. So I just started reading about the Quakers and I came upon the fact that a woman had been hanged by, it simply said, in 1660, a Quaker woman was hanged in Boston by the Puritans. And I thought, what? I grew up in right next to Massachusetts in Connecticut. I grew up as a Quaker. I went to elementary school and high school in the United States, and I never heard of this woman. Why? Why hadn't I never heard of her? And secondly, what was her story? So I began to look into it, and I thought, this is a profoundly important story that needs to be told.
She does all this at great personal cost because she goes back to England ostensibly to say goodbye to an aunt who was very close to her. But then she meets Fox, becomes a Quaker, and then kind of picks up the flag of and becomes a zealot for and a proselytizer for the Quakers, and just sends a note saying won't be coming back. Don't hold supper for me, and is gone for years.
You know, when I first started researching Mary Dyer, there were some things about Mary that are very hard to like. And I think because of that, she has been a bit of a benighted figure in history. The first thing people say about her is, how could she have left 6 children for 5 years? That was one of the things I pondered, and I could carry on for at least half an hour on that topic, because it encompasses a lot of historical facts about people's relationships to their children in those years. But I thought, I have to figure out why and how somebody could have done that, left their children, and then why she would have been so powerfully attached to the Quakers. So I posited myself, this is not a historically known, this is my idea, that if she had suffered those kinds of postpartum depressions and she had been told that her womb was seeded with evil, it would have made her very difficult for her to bond with those babies. And the other thing that is framed within historical accuracy is that the early Quakers believed that the apostles, the first people who followed Christ, were the way they should be, that they were only listening to the word of God as it had come down through Christ, and this was their, they didn't need ministers. They didn't need anybody to translate this, and in fact, they really were accessible to God himself. And you have to understand that in the 17th century, people would sit around and talk about things like this the way we would sit around and talk about hockey or our current government or climate change. They talked about the coming apocalypse and how God was thinking about England, and they talked about religion as if it was a real solid, tangible thing. So the early Quakers felt that they felt so strongly that they had been given this message that anyone could have a relationship with God, that you didn't need a church. You could do it anywhere. You could do it in a stable. You could do it in the moors, because this came out of Yorkshire and Cumberland. You could worship under the sky. You could worship in your humble dwellings. And it came from somebody who was apprenticed to a shoemaker, George Fox. He wasn't a man of education. So they were overturning things like, you can only receive the word of God through somebody who went to Cambridge or Oxford. These were privileged young men who came from wealthy families. They were the ones who were controlling the church. So you see, it was that the people who went out were called the Valiant 60, and I can very much see that Mary might have been one of those people.
She was just gently, quietly going about her Quaker business.
Exactly, exactly.
And
the interesting thing is that Charles II peacefully was returned to the throne. That's an interesting part of English history. They chopped the head off of Charles I. They had this incredible, wild, crazy stuff with Oliver Cromwell. His son doesn't want to take it over. And finally, the people say, come on, this is enough. Let's bring back the king. He's over in France. So they bring back Charles II. One of the first things he says is, I believe in religious tolerance. Like, I'm not going to be like my father. Look, I don't care about that stuff. Religious tolerance is what I'm about. And so then he found out what was going on in their putative colony, which had really gone their own way. And he said, you don't do that. We don't hang people for their, just because they're, you know, you send those people over here. And so that's a whole, I mean, I could have written a whole second novel about Charles II and his people and how that played out.
The book is A Measure of Light. It's a novel. I've been speaking with the author, Beth Pounding, and A Measure of Light is published by Knopf Canada.